Welcome to the 21st century, where the corporate propaganda machine works 24-7 to manufacture your reality. Every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Political Analysis challenges the corporate narrative with independent news, analysis, and passionate conversations on the most critical issues of our time. Don't let the corporate echo machine become your truth. Tune in live to Political Analysis or visit the archives at prn.fm. If you like the show, rate us in iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
PRN.FM, bringing you new shows and fresh ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food, and it is all about food here on August 8th, 2012. A little bit about me. I'm the founder of Responsible Eating and Living, a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, and any time you want to ask me a comment or question, I am here for you. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. All our meals should be real, and you know, I think most people aren't really eating real anymore. Do you know where your food comes from? Do you know what's in your food? Okay, well, that's what we talk about here. We talk about food. I wanted to mention before I bring on my first guest that I'm moving. Oh, the idea of moving, putting everything in boxes and packing up and lifting and bending your knees and making sure you don't hurt yourself. Well, none of that's going to happen because I'm just moving in the schedule here on Progressive Radio Network. So instead of Wednesdays at 3 p.m., starting in September, It's All About Food will be heard on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. So whatever you need to remember that, I'll remind you a few more times. But I hope you stay with me and join me next month on Tuesdays. And of course, there's always that archive where you can listen to the show at any time. I love the internet. All right, let's move on to my favorite subject. Now, my favorite subject, of course, is foods, but when I get really specific, it's green foods. So today is really going to be fun because I'm going to be talking with the author of the new cookbook, Wild, about greens. And that's Nava Atlas. She's the author and illustrator of many well-known vegetarian and vegan cookbooks, including Vegan Holiday Kitchen. We talked about that last year on this show. Vegan Express, Vegan Soups and Hearty Stews for All Seasons, The Vegetarian Family Cookbook, and The Vegetarian 5 Ingredient Gourmet. Her first book was Vegetariana, now considered a classic in its field. Nava is also a visual artist specializing in limited edition artist books and text-driven objects and installations. Her work has been shown nationally in museums, galleries, and alternative art spaces and is part of many museum and university collections. Learn more about Nava at vegkitchen.com and NavaAtlasArt.com. She has two grown sons and lives in the Hudson Valley region with her husband, and that's where she is right now talking to me on It's All About Food. Welcome, Nava.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn. My first mistake of the day. Karen, I was going to say, imagine I wrote a book on your very favorite
subject. My very favorite subject, greens. And it's a good one. So thanks for writing it. I've been enjoying thumbing through it, and definitely I eat greens all the time, so I have an opportunity to try out most of these recipes in the book. So let's talk about greens. Why a book about greens? You don't have to tell me that, but tell everybody else.
Well, this really started with something really close to home, literally. My husband grew chard 3 years ago. And at that time, well, you know, it was before the rabbits and the groundhogs discovered where our garden was. And I called it the Swiss chard explosion of 2009. And he kept bringing it in and bringing it in. And I, you know, at a certain point, I just really, literally, I wanted to lock the door and say, I haven't even used the chard you brought in 2 days ago. And I was thinking, you know, there must be more to greens and sautéing them with garlic and olive oil, as wonderful as that is. I didn't know much about freezing them. I didn't know about, you know, other creative ways to use all this chard. And I started to look for ideas. And, of course, there's a lot of really disparate and kind of sometimes strange ideas on the Internet. And I started to look for books. And I realized there wasn't a comprehensive book about greens published since 1996. That's a lot in publishing terms.
Right.
So there really wasn't a book out there that incorporated kale chips and green smoothies and other creative ways to use greens, dehydrating them, other things to do, many, many other things to do aside from just the classic olive oil sauté. So I thought, well, why not me?
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like a really good idea at the time, and it was. I learned a lot myself.
You know, we'll never really know what humans were eating thousands of years ago, back in the hunter-gatherer days and before that, the forager days. But I think we were chomping mostly on greens and maybe some berries. And we have come so far from that. You know, we like to think that we're so civilized and we've progressed very far. But many people today have horrible diets and they're plagued with so many illnesses. And what we really need to do is get back to greens, because they're packed with just about everything you need. I don't know if you've listened recently to Dr. Michael Greger's recent DVD. He puts one out every year.
I didn't see that one yet.
And he lists all the top reasons for death and for the year. It's a fun video. And one of the things he said, and I just keep repeating it because I loved it, was, is there anything kale can't do?
That's a great saying. You know, I was going to say another reason why I ended up thinking that this would be a good book to write was not only because of our own garden, but I've been a member of community-supported agriculture farms, and I see how overwhelmed the members are by greens, and
yeah,
all the farms grow tons of greens because they're really easy to grow. It's a crop that isn't often bothered by pests, unless, of course, it's our garden. And I often heard people say, well, what am I going to do with all of this? And I heard people say, even more quietly, you know, I feel so bad, but half of this is going to end up in the compost.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's just really sad. We all need more ideas for greens, and there really are so many interesting ways to we use them, and I hope we get to talk about those.
Right, and I certainly love kale, and I eat it just about every day, but as you mention in your book, there are a lot of other greens out there. The variety is phenomenal, and although most of them can be prepared in the same way, they're all rather unique with different textures and flavors. Some are spicier than others and bitter. So let's just go down the green list and mention a few of these. The ones that people don't use very often, and I'm going to start with one because I try and use every green I possibly can, and when I get my beets and when they have beet greens, I'll use the beet greens or the turnips with the greens, but I have to confess I have never had radish greens.
Well, you know, probably the reason you haven't is because they're really perishable. By the time, let's say if they go to a store, by the time they get to the store, the greens have pretty much wilted. So this is really one for someone who belongs to a CSA or gets their radishes really fresh from the farm market. And, you know, of all the greens, I would say possibly those and dandelion were the ones that I used least because they were least available. I like radish greens. Dandelion greens, I would say if anybody has asked me which were my least favorite, I must confess it was the dandelion. It's really hard to shake that bitterness. I like bitterness, a little bit of bitterness that's in the mustard greens, but this is, you know, that's their characteristic for the dandelion greens is their bitter quality, and it's really hard to work around that. So you have to love the bitter greens in order to appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I love them, but it was a process. And so many people are not used to eating these foods, and so some of the ones that some of us might consider milder, a lot of people think are too bitter. For myself, I kind of jumped into the whole green scene when 6 years ago I came down with advanced ovarian cancer, and one of the things that I was doing was juicing, and I wanted to do everything that I could to protect me. So I wasn't eating sugar. I wasn't even eating the sweet fruits because I knew that cancer fed on sugar. And I just crammed greens, and so I swallowed that bitter tonic, and I learned to love it. Really love it. And so, you know, we can change our taste buds and learn to love all different kinds of things. Not saying one is better than the other, although some of them are, but our taste buds, our bodies are so adaptable.
And you know, yours is not the first time I've heard people say that greens literally save their life.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. That really is amazing to me. That's a real leap of faith, and it's really wonderful that that happened for you.
And then the dandelions, I'm thinking back to in the early 90s, I lived in the south of France, and I went to visit a friend of mine, and she was having some people over for dinner. And we went out and literally picked dandelion leaves in the field, and she brought them in and made this giant salad, and it was really bitter. It was just dandelion greens and just bitter. I think today I would enjoy that salad a lot more. But there are things that you can do. You can eat greens raw, and you list so many different ways to cook and prepare greens. Certainly cooking them
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that when you cook them, that takes some of the bitterness away.
Oh, definitely. There's like mustard greens mellow almost completely when you cook them. And sometimes people like them raw in salad, and you can contrast it with, you know, apple or dried fruit, things that kind of are counterpoints to the little bit of bitterness. But I really learned to love mustard greens.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very famous dish from Indian cuisine where you combine them with spinach, which really is a very mild green. And so the two of them together have a really nice synergy. Both
yeah.
visually and then the way they taste.
And that's called, that dish is called sog?
Yes, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, I love that.
I remembered.
Love that dish, right. And you've got a great recipe for it in the book. And one of the things I like is Indian food can be really great. There's a lot of great spices and seasonings. But for me, most of the time in restaurants, the food, for my taste, tend to be too oily. And most of the time too salty. And it's great to find recipes where you can make that food with that power pack, but without too much oil and salt.
Well, I agree, and especially with also with Asian food or Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
I really love bok choy, and it's just a simple dish of stir-fried bok choy. Sometimes a little tofu stirred in. And I like Bragg's liquid aminos because it's a little bit less pungent than soy sauce, a lot less salty, and it just brings the flavor out in food instead of overwhelming it.
Okay, so we want to eat greens because they are loaded with nutrients, and so many of them, too many to even get into. We probably haven't even identified most of them. They have so many great immune system boosting properties. They're also detoxifying, cleansing. They're what humans are designed to eat primarily, and most people aren't eating them.
We will change that.
We're
right?
changing it. Yes. Well, you know it. Yes. 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 Not only is it important to me to eliminate animal foods from the diet, which is, I'm underlying that here, so critical today in this world for so many reasons. But I think, why shouldn't we be focused on eating the best diet we can that's going to make us feel great, look great, live long and prosper, and be gentle on the environment, and taste great? We can have it all.
Absolutely.
We can have it all.
Well, I'm going to respond to a couple of things you said. First of all, about the nutrients, because I learned something really interesting from you when I was on your show late last year, which is that some of these valuable vitamins that are in greens are actually fat soluble.
Right.
So I worry a little bit about people who really won't use any sort of fat or oil. I could be wrong, of course, but I just think that a little bit of coconut or olive oil, and I'm saying a little bit, it just brings out their flavor and it helps you absorb all the vitamins that are in them, or the ones that are fat-soluble, like K. K is a vitamin that you don't find in a lot of things other than greens. So we want to absorb as much of that as we can while we're eating that.
Vitamin K is really interesting because my understanding is that doctors are required to give women who are delivering babies a shot of vitamin K just before they deliver. And, you know, if we were eating properly, we wouldn't need that.
I don't remember that. Is that a new thing?
I don't know. I've just heard of it.
I don't remember getting any shots.
Yeah.
But
well,
then again, I was in so much pain, I probably wouldn't have even paid any attention to that. But then the calcium also. I was on the Dr. Don show, and he explained really beautifully why the calcium in greens is so much more absorbable than the calcium that's in dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really quote it, but it's supposed to be true.
Well, the thing
that's really important for us who are on plant-based diets.
It's important for everyone, and bones are not just made of calcium, and the body needs a lot more to build bones, and those components come in dark leafy green vegetables like magnesium. Those things don't come in milk. We're meant to eat greens. I did want to mention this thing about fat. I will be talking to Alan Goldhammer in the next part of this show, and he's going to be talking about a salt-free, sugar-free, oil-free diet. But I think fat is definitely important, and I personally choose to use very little oil, if any at all. But when I'm eating greens, I get fat. And the fat comes from either avocado or whole coconut or raw nuts and seeds. There's lots of ways to get fat from whole food sources, but it's important.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And sometimes...
I'm keeping my one tablespoon a day of olive oil. That's about it.
And that's fine. There's one green dish that I... This is mine now that I kind of go nuts over. I used to have it in an Asian restaurant, Buddha Bodai, in my neighborhood. And they come out with this big pile of greens, and I would always choose watercress. You could choose a variety. And I could never figure out what the flavor was. And it was just the simplest thing. It was just a little ginger tossed with the greens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm nuts over it. Simplest things. Get me nutty. I wanted to mention, too, you talk about putting greens in lots of dishes, finding ways to add greens in things. So if you're eating a starchy food like rice or potatoes, you come up with great ways to add in more greens.
Yes, I call that greening up your carbs. So why have plain brown rice when you can chop some anything into it, some spinach or kale or whatever you have on hand. It's just, first of all, it's so much more interesting, you know, from a culinary perspective. And you're right, you can put greens in your wild rice. You can, I like making hash browns on weekends, a combination of tofu and potatoes. And now I always put in either some strands of collard greens or some kale, plus some scallions. I just think it looks better, tastes
mm-hmm.
better. There's so much more nutrition in it. And it's amazing how much you can take a whole bunch of kale and it really wilts down to, I wouldn't say almost nothing like spinach does, but, you know, it compacts down so much when you wilt it a little bit. So you're getting a lot more of it that way.
I think that's a good way to help people introduce themselves to greens, especially when they've had bad experiences with greens and don't think they're going to like it if they mix it in with other foods like that. I'll never forget, one of my favorite things as a kid was mashed potatoes mixed with spinach.
And oh, that's so good.
It's so good. I think it was canned spinach at the time, but I still like greens mixed with potatoes. It really is good. I want to bring up, I think greens are the perfect food. There is nothing that kale can't do. But there are some people that kind of give out negative information, like, oh, you have to be careful, you have to not eat too much of this, too much of that. And I just wanted to touch on some of those, because in case people hear those things, I want them not to worry. Have you heard any of those be wary of?
I have, but and I think it really, I've read about it, and I decided not to put it in the book because it is controversial. I really couldn't get a consistent answer, and I think we're talking about the oxalates.
That's one of them.
And I think that the rule of thumb is that unless you have some sort of condition, like a thyroid condition, you really shouldn't worry. I don't know that any of us is overeating greens.
Right.
I think sometimes cooking lightly really reduces that. So that's why I like to have a combination of raw greens and juiced greens or greens in a smoothie or, you know, very lightly braised greens. So if you're having them in a variety of different ways, then you're absorbing them also in a variety of different ways. I don't know if there's anybody out there who actually eats 5 pounds of raw spinach every day.
Yeah, that's
or
a really good point.
Maybe there are people, but...
Well, yeah, I don't know. But it's a good point, and the point is not to worry and certainly have some variety. I've heard recommendations that you can have the more high oxalate greens maybe once or twice a week. That's the spinach and the chards, and have the other kale, the other items like kale and collards that aren't as high a little more often. But then there was this thing about how kale and iodine can impact your thyroid. And there are some people that think if you have too much kale, you're going to have hypothyroidism. And I want to kind of dispel that notion. Everything that I've read says that unless you're eating, like you said, 5 pounds, I mean, lots and lots and lots of this food, too much of any food is really not good. Too much water is not good. You could drown.
And, you know, that's why it's really nice when you start learning about greens. You really do want to learn about the other greens. And the way I set the book up is rather than green by green, I did it sort of by style of food. Like, for example, there's just, you know, the green basics. And then there's greens in soups and stews. And then there's greens with, you know, the other veggies and pastas. And you learn how interchangeable they are. I mean, if you like kale in a classic Italian dish, well, you may like it next time with escarole. So I really try to point out how adaptable the greens are and how interchangeable they are. So try other ones. Don't, you know, it's wonderful if you're in love with kale, but then you're limiting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Try the other ones. They're also amazing.
They're all good. I love mustard greens. Another.
I do too, yes.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. That and collard greens. I've never really used collard greens much before. Again, because the old books say take the leaves and boil them for 20 minutes, which makes them so unappealing.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they become that kind of drab olive color, and the texture isn't very interesting. And
then,
all their flavor.
And then mix them up with a lot of lard, right? That's what the old things did with them. Please.
Well, you know, the new way to cook collard greens, which actually to me makes them one of the most easy greens to deal with, is you take the stem out and you stack the leaf halves, maybe 6 or 8 leaf halves, and you can picture it, they're those really beautiful, large, fan-shaped leaves, and you take it from one of the skinny ends and roll it up almost like a cigar, and then you cut this into narrow, narrow ribbons. And then you can cut across one way so the ribbons become a little shorter. And then basically you stir fry them for 3 minutes. And they're bright green. They're completely done. And then you can mix them with really just about anything. I like to mix them with other noodly things like pasta or spaghetti squash or shirataki noodles, which are made out of tofu.
Mm.
It's all really good. And it's really a fast food.
It all is really good, and I could probably talk about greens for many, many, many hours, but we just have a few more minutes, and I wanted to mention some of the media coverage your book has been getting. I like to use an expression, don't read your press, weigh it, because some press may not be exactly what you like to hear, but the interesting thing is the vegan diet is certainly getting a lot of press. More people are either becoming vegan or eating a lot more vegan food, and all of that is great. And yet there are all these naysayers out there that always try to put the kibosh on vegan food, and yet it's getting harder and harder.
It is, yes. I'm not sure which specific piece of media. Are you talking about the so-called fair and balanced one?
Oh, no, I haven't even read that one. I just read the What's the Beef About Eating Vegan on FoxNews.com.
Oh, yes, that's the one. That's
the
one I'm referring
okay.
to, yes.
Right.
I mean, it was a little bit, I don't know if it meant to be a little bit sensationalistic. I think that's their style. I know that my colleague, she was very unhappy, Juliana Hever, she was misquoted, so she really wasn't happy with the piece. I wasn't misquoted. I
loved your quote.
One of the things I said was that, because people say, well, why go vegan? All you do is just substitute for meat and cheese, and that's totally not true. I mean, there are meat and cheese substitutes, and, you know, some of them are better than others. I always say that, you know, sometimes people are just nostalgic for what they grew up with, and so to have a tofu hot dog once in a while, I don't really think there's any crime in that. It's not the best food in the world, but, you know, it plays to our emotions and our memories.
There are many, many, many near-vegan or vegan dishes that people make all over the world and have been for many, many centuries. But the quote that that they gave in the article was, there's an integrity to vegan cooking that doesn't require substitutes.
This
I love that.
That's true. And when you look at Asian cuisine, Indian, Middle Eastern, there's so many already vegan dishes, and they use so much of the legumes and grains and such interesting different ways. I mean, we think of hummus and tahini, and what you were talking about, you know, the saag dish in Indian cuisine, and they use so many lentils and also chickpeas and rice. There's many foods that we draw upon that aren't a substitute for something else. They are just what they are. And personally, my diet is really based on vegetables. So that's really just my favorite food group because it's so endlessly, endlessly interesting.
I want to mention one more thing, and that is if people are interested in weight loss, green foods are really the secret. And specifically, if you want super fast, easy weight loss, I believe you make big kale salads or big collard green salads. Eating these green foods raw have so much fiber. They take so long to eat. And you eat a big bowl, eat a pound of greens raw a day, you're not hungry for anything else. It's impossible.
They fill you up because of all the fiber.
All that
fiber. You know, they do take a while to digest. Not in an unpleasant way.
Right.
I mean, I've gotten to the point where once in a blue moon I'll have a bagel, I feel horrible for hours. If I have a kale salad for lunch, I'll feel full but not horrible.
Right.
There really is such a difference.
It is magic, and there is nothing that kale can't do. Can I say that a few more times?
We'll make a T-shirt.
That's right. Nava, it was great talking to you. I love your book, Wild About Greens.
Thank you.
I'm wild about it. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. And check out VegKitchen.com. That's your website, right?
Yes. Thank you so much, Karen.
Okay. All the best.
You too.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Check out my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And stay with me because I'm going to be bringing on Alan Goldhammer, and we're talking about the True North Kitchen. We'll be back. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back with It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me on this lovely August 8th, 2012. Okay, so next up we're going to be talking about SOS-free food. No sugar, oil, or salt. And guess what? It's delicious. Really. And I'm going to be doing that talking with Dr. Alan Goldhammer, who is the founder of True North Health Center, a state-of-the-art facility that provides medical and chiropractic services, psychotherapy and counseling, and massage and bodywork. He is also director of the center's groundbreaking residential health education program. Dr. Goldhammer has supervised the fasts of thousands of patients. Under his guidance, the center has become one of the premier training facilities for doctors wishing to gain certification in the supervision of the therapeutic use of fasting. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Ellen Goldhammer.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I am so happy to be talking to you. You have no idea how long I've wanted to get you on this show. I've heard you give talks around the country, and I love the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to talk about the cookbook, but before we get to that, I want to talk about you and all of the great things you've been doing at the True North Center. So that's been around for about 25 years now?
Yeah, a little over that, actually.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
My grandson the other day, I was trying to explain to him that when I was a little boy, we didn't have computers. And he said, well, what do you mean you didn't have computers? And I said, well, you know, they hadn't invented computers when I was a little boy. He said, Grandpa, when you were a little boy, did they have electricity? Yeah.
Well, it all starts with that. Yeah, it's amazing what people were I don't know how we were able to accomplish things a quarter of a century ago without the Internet. Without social networking, how people found out anything at all really boggles my mind. But it's here and now, and it's 2012, and a lot of wonderful things are happening, and especially at the True North Health Center. So this is a place where you do a lot of different things. So let's touch on some of them.
Well, we have an integrated medical facility. So we have doctors of medicine and chiropractic and naturopathy and psychology all working together to try to teach people that health results from healthful living. So we focus on diet, sleep, exercise, and also the use of fasting to give the body a chance to kind of heal itself. And the diet that we use is a very specific diet. It's a diet of whole natural foods, and we avoid the chemicals that are commonly added to food called oil, salt, and sugar. And in doing that, we give people a diet that they can eat ad libitum or as much as they desire and still be able to lose weight and rebuild their nutrient reserves. And so it's a very specific diet, and it's a very natural diet. In the past, it was hard for people because when you take the sugar, oil, and salt chemicals out of the food, at first, people go through a little bit of a withdrawal effect. They're kind of caught by the artificial stimulation of dopamine in their brains that comes from these chemical additives. And when you remove those, at first they don't like food. But then, as they adapt, they get to the point where they not only do they tolerate it, but they actually prefer it. And, of course, then they get all the side health benefits that come from eating a whole natural foods diet.
So there has to be some leap of faith in believing that in a short amount of time they're going to recalibrate their taste buds and things are going to taste better.
It used to be it took a big leap of faith because the foods that were presented to people were not attractive or appealing. Fortunately for us, we were able to find a chef who was conventionally trained. You know, he went 4 years at the Greenbrier, and he was the executive chef at a very prominent health resort for 4 years before we hired him. And so he was trained in conventional food preparation and has fully adopted a health-promoting vegan SOS-free diet approach. And he's figured out how to blend the two, use those traditional skills of presenting attractive food and yet still make it healthy. As you know, most conventional food is really just a carrier agent for oil, salt, and sugar. And so, you know, you can make anything taste good if you throw enough sugar, oil, and salt on it. But to make good food taste good without oil, salt, and sugar, the first step is you have to start with good food. And the second step is you have to have an approach to it that takes into account both taste and aesthetics. And Ramses has done a fabulous job of that, and he's culminated in his book, Bravo.
Yeah, and I'm looking at many of the recipes there. I'd like to say that I eat a lot like this because I'm also a proponent of not eating salt and oil. Occasionally I'll have a treat that will have sugar in it, but most of my cooking is SOS free.
Well, now you're going to be able to have treats without the addition of sugar because Ramses has included desserts and treats section in his cookbook, which these things are fabulous and yet don't require the addition of these additives to the diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It really is great. And
we had an interesting experience. One of Ramses's recipes in the Bravo cookbook is called mango banana pie.
Oh, I wanted to make. Yeah, that's my favorite one in here.
No, that's a fabulous recipe, and it includes some coconuts and dates that provide a bit of sweetening. And, of course, it has mangoes and bananas, and then he has just a fabulous way of putting this together. And one of our patients took one of these pies to their family holiday get-together. And the comments were interesting. She said, first of all, the teenagers there loved it. And they made such a revealing comment when she said, Mom, this mango pie, it tastes great, but it has mangoes in it. The fact is, if you get really good food and you put it together really well, you can have delicious taking celebratory treats without having to resort to poisoning yourself with the artificial addition of chemicals that fool your brain and lead to people overeating and becoming fat, sick, and miserable.
Well, I think most of these desserts you can have any time of the day, for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Foods in the Bravo Cookbook, because they're all from whole natural foods, you find that you don't have to be as concerned about the temptations to get yourself into trouble with them.
You've been involved in some groundbreaking research and reporting on hypertension. Can we talk a little bit about some of that? I know so many people that have high blood pressure, they're on medication, and they really don't believe that there's anything they can do about it.
Well, the fact is, the majority of people in industrialized societies, if they manage to live to retirement age, will develop high blood pressure. It's become ubiquitous. It's the leading contributing cause of death and disability. It's the leading justification for prescription medication. It's the principal contributing cause to the diseases that debilitate people, including stroke and heart attack and kidney disease. And so it's a very important condition. Our society spends billions of dollars on research and drugs, which unfortunately don't work very well. And we were very fortunate in that one of my patients happened to be a very prominent professor at Cornell University. His name was T. Colin Campbell.
Oh, yeah, we know
T. Also the author of the China Study. And mm-hmm. he was the first scientist to discover dioxin. He isolated dioxin, got some toxicity exposure, decided to come to us to try to unwind the consequences of that, and so undertook some fasting with us, and this was many years ago. And he saw the work we were doing and the data we were collecting on high blood pressure, felt it was very important, and suggested that he take that research back to Cornell with him and get his team to help analyze the data and help us get this research published. And so he did do that. He took our data back to Cornell. We took 174 consecutive patients that had high blood pressure, and we put them through fasting of between 5 and 40 days, and then refed them on a plant-based SOS-free diet, just like we lay out in Bravo. And what we found was that people with high blood pressure normalized their blood pressure. In fact, it was so consistent that 174 out of 174 patients were able to achieve normal blood pressure without the use of medication.
Wow.
And that paper was eventually published in a peer-reviewed index journal, and it demonstrates the largest effects that have ever been shown in treating high blood pressure in humans. Essentially, everybody with essential hypertension that's willing to follow this program is able to eliminate the need for medication. And so it was very exciting. Our average effect size, the average drop in blood pressure in stage 3 hypertensives, that is patients that you could justify medication use in,
mm-hmm.
the average drop was over 60 points.
Wow.
Which is a huge effect size.
Yep, that should.
And Dr. Campbell saw that, and he took it back, and he turned it over to his team. And in confidence, they told me later when Dr. Campbell first came back from the True North Health Center where he had undergone fasting, they thought maybe he had suffered brain damage. Because they said the idea of some chiropractic quack in California starving people to treat their high blood pressure was the stupidest idea they'd ever heard of until they saw the data results.
Yeah, well, there have been many great researchers and scientists who have been accused of that, and then we discover they really know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, when it comes to fasting, of course, we didn't discover it. If you read many books, including the Bible, Moses, David, Elijah, and Jesus fasted for as long as 40 days, and in some cases many times. So this is an ancient practice that's been well recognized. It's recognized by virtually every religious tradition, and all we've done is applied it in cases where people are sick, is generally as a consequence of dietary excess.
Now,
excesses of fat and protein in general, excesses of animal fat and protein in particular, leads to these diseases that used to be called the diseases of kings. And now they're common, ubiquitous diseases because we're all eating like only the wealthy elite used to be able to eat. And as a consequence, we're developing diseases that are caused by our diets. The reason why we're excited about the Bravo cookbook is because it gives people attractive, easy-to-make recipes that taste good but that don't contain the things that cause the problems. With the Bravo cookbook, it's nice because I'm not a chef. Mm-hmm. But even I can make these recipes, and they turn out good every time.
They're very good. And the point is using whole, fresh, quality fruits and vegetables. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, don't know much about produce, or they don't buy it from quality places, or maybe it sits around for a long time. But when you get into the hang of this, it's really easy, it's really simple, and it tastes delicious. What I want to know is, if people don't do the fast and they just change their diet and they get on the SOS-free Bravo diet, do you know how long it takes to see the change in blood pressure?
We do, actually, and more importantly, the change in taste neuroadaptation.
Mm.
In other words, we know from the scientific literature that if you go from a conventional high-salt diet, which is what most people are on, and you go to a low-sodium diet where you limit the added, unnecessary, toxic excess added sodium chloride to the diet, it takes most people about 4 weeks to neuroadapt to where good foods start to taste good. At first, good foods don't taste good because you're addicted to the artificial stimulation of those chemicals added to the diet. But eventually, your taste will neuroadapt, and then you get to the point where you'd actually just as soon not have all that salty stuff.
Absolutely.
In the case of fat, it's actually a little bit more complicated. When you take oil and processed fats out of the diet, it can take people as long as 3 months to fully adapt to where they feel satiated, comfortable, without all that grease and fat in the diet.
Hmm.
And so it can be a long transition. That's why if somebody's finding it's too difficult to adapt to a healthy diet, even though they believe it and they know they should eat this way, but they're having trouble struggling because of their addictions to the pleasure trap, then what we find is if we put them on a period of fasting, that transition happens much quicker.
Mm.
For people that are already eating pretty well, oftentimes this transition is simple and quicker, and they don't have to go on a fast or do anything else. They just have to fully adopt the diet. So for a certain percentage of our people, we can just give them the Bravo cookbook. They follow the 2-week integrated recipes. They make the recipes. They eat the food. They get healthier. In the case of blood pressure, it depends. Now, we see very sick people. Some of them come in 240 over 140 on 6 medications.
Wow.
If you see people that are very sick, it takes longer than if you see people that are not as sick,
sure,
if you're dealing with it earlier. In some, our fasting durations range from 5 to 40 days. With healthy eating, it might be a week or two. It might be a month or two. In some cases, it might take many months in order to normalize the blood pressure. The other complication is, of course, getting off the medication. As soon as you adopt a healthy, plant-based, SOS-free diet, of course, your need for medication begins to drop. So you have to work with your physician that prescribed the medication to appropriately withdraw those medications. Otherwise, you can end up with what's called a hypotensive crisis, where your blood pressure is driven too low.
Mm.
And so, you know, that's actually one of the side effects, is you can sometimes get well so quickly,
mm-hmm,
that you have to just be cautious about some of these exogenous agents that are taken. I'd like to point out that SOS is the international symbol of danger. And it also stands for, of course, sugar, oil, and salt.
Yep, that's
dangerous. I believe there's a connection.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
And what makes the Bravo cookbook unique is that many cookbooks get rid of the fat in the terms of the excess oil. Some of them get rid of the sugar. Some of them get rid of the salt. But as far as I know, nobody's been willing to actually step forward and come up with a creative way to eliminate SOS altogether and still have the recipes turn out in a way that people can enjoy them.
I absolutely agree with you. I talk to many, many people on this show, and I'm always excited to talk about new vegan cookbooks because personally, from my point of view, I want to eliminate pain and suffering on this planet. And when people stop eating animals and stop encouraging factory farming, that's a good thing. But then we talk about health, and I'm always disappointed because it doesn't go far enough.
You know, they say that being a vegan might help you get into heaven because of the moral, spiritual, and ethical benefits of being a vegan, but it will not delay how quickly you get to heaven unless you adopt a health-promoting diet. And so just being a vegan is a beginning. It's not an end. Being
That's
a
right.
vegan may be the best thing for you and the planet. It might be the right spiritual, moral, and ethical decision, But you have to go beyond that, because if you just adopt a lot of processed, sugary, salty, fatty, vegan foods, that's not going to ensure health. You know, soda pop may be vegan, but it doesn't make it healthy. Deep-fried potatoes may be vegan, but it doesn't mean they're going to be healthy. So you definitely want to be on a plant-based diet. But beyond that, you also want to eliminate the chemicals that have been added to our food to fool our brains that lead to the overeating and the diseases of excess. And that's why SOS-free becomes an important consideration.
Do you know what happens when you're on a primarily salt-free diet and then you might go to a restaurant or something and have something that's normally salted, and then you have this sensation in your body, you can't drink enough water, and you feel horrible? Do you know what's going on when that happens?
Well, of course, because, you know, if you think about salt, if you take a certain amount of it, it will kill you. And if you take a tablespoon, it'll act as an emetic and cause you to vomit. And now, in very, very small quantities, it's an essential nutrient. And the amount of sodium you need is provided by your food. That's why your brain is so sensitive to sodium, because in a natural setting, there is no added salt. So you're designed to detect the very small amounts of sodium chloride in whole natural foods, and it makes them appealing to you. Now, if you add more artificial salt to the food, of course, your brain, having evolved in an environment of scarcity, thinks, well, a little is good, a lot must be better. And so and you can literally become adapted to that higher salt intake. Once you get off of it, though, and you go back and, say, try to eat a cup of soup at a restaurant, you actually will experience what's like a burning sensation in your mouth from the excess sodium. And I've had patients tell me, they've told the waiter, oh, dear, there seems to have been a mistake. Somebody accidentally must have spilled salt in the soup. And the waiter will taste it and say, well, no, it tastes fine.
Right.
What's changed is not the salt in the soup. It's that your palate and your ability to detect sodium increases as you get away from adding this in a form of chemicalized addition to the diet.
You include psychotherapy and counseling at your facility. Why is that necessary?
Well, we have a brilliant clinical psychologist, Dr. Doug Lyle, the principal author of our other book, The Pleasure Trap, which is the book that talks about mastering the hidden force that undermines health and happiness. And the reality is that this change to a plant-based SOS-free diet is one of the most difficult tasks that anybody will do in industrialized countries. This is an exceptionally challenging goal, because we live in a world designed to make us fat, sick, and miserable, and to give us what we want, not what we need. And so everywhere you go, people are going to try to undermine your attempts to eat a health-promoting diet by giving you things that are extremely appealing. It's very similar to if you decide to abstain from drinking alcohol and you go to a party and everybody's drinking. They get very uncomfortable with you choosing not to drink. Makes them very self-conscious. You create cognitive dissonance in people. And teaching people how to live in a world that's not designed to support health is a little tricky matter. And Dr. Lyle is a brilliant psychologist that's helped develop strategies to make this process somewhat easier and more effective. And so he plays an important role in the True North Health Center in helping educate our patients on developing strategies so they can navigate this very difficult course of how do you live healthfully when everybody else is becoming upset. And the more successful you are, the more upset they become. And if in our book, The Pleasure Trap, the first two-thirds of it really are all about understanding why this process of doing this is so difficult, why people are so resistant and reluctant. And so it's, a critical part of our success has been incorporating psychology and psychological tenets into our teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we live in a society that's so reductionist. Everything is specialized, and the specialists are only focusing on one particular part of an issue. And human bodies are complex, and we really need to address lots of different things when we want to solve a problem.
You know, one of the things I really like about Chef Bravo's new book, Bravo, is that the text in the book in the beginning is rather brief. It's not it's about 12 pages.
Mm-hmm.
But in those 12 pages, we very, very succinctly summarized why people should be adopting a plant-based SOS-free diet. And what that does is it's a short enough group of material that people that maybe are a little reluctant to this are willing to read it. They're willing to read it and consider it. And so this can be a useful book at convincing some of your friends and family that may think you're a little bit of a whack job because you're trying to eat this healthy diet, that maybe you're not actually a whack job after all. And because the recipes are readily available and they, you know, they look and they actually taste good, I think this is going to be a useful book at helping kind of, maybe it won't convert everybody that reads it to being a vegan, but I think it'll make people that read it think maybe you're not crazy after all.
Oh, absolutely. So you've been doing this for 25 or so years. Were you doing the SOS-free diet since the beginning?
We have been, actually, since I was about 16 years old.
Wow.
So I was very fortunate to get exposed to this information very early on. And so I've had the opportunity to do this and live this for 37 years so far. I'm 53 years old right now. So I've got a chance to really see. I have a 25-year-old son who's done it since before birth, and I think it's very interesting to see. As you see people that have been doing this program over decades,
mm-hmm.
it's really quite dramatic, the differences you see in how they age,
mm-hmm.
how they...
or how they don't age.
exactly. And it's not that eating a healthy diet keeps you from aging, but it allows you to age at a more normal rate. And what you're seeing around you is the rapidity with which people are deteriorating unnecessarily because they're addicted to the artificial stimulation of dopamine in their brain that's brought about by including sugar, oil, and salt and animal foods in the diet.
25 years ago, this kind of diet was relatively unheard of, very radical, and people are coming around slowly.
I have absolute proof of that. 15 years ago, when we introduced our first cookbook called the Health Brony Cookbook,
mm-hmm.
by the same publisher, it took 1.5 years to sell out the first printing of the book.
Mm-hmm.
We just introduced the Bravo Cookbook to the market. It took 1.5 weeks
wow.
to sell out the first printing.
That's exciting.
Of the Bravo Cookbook. So they're already in the second printing. And so, I mean, it's a huge difference in terms of the willingness to consider radical, which it comes from the word radicus or root or cause, dietary approaches, to dealing with many of the ills that plague society today. And I think that the Bravo Cookbook is unique in the sense that, as I said, it's completely SOS-free. It's completely clean. You don't have to go in here and start modifying the recipes to try to make them acceptable. If you're sympathetic to a vegan diet, and you're sympathetic to a health-promoting diet, this brings it all together.
Well, you've got 2 weeks' worth of recipes in here, complete menu plans. Everything is very varied and not really difficult to make and all super, super delicious.
And also, you know, he's really put commonly available ingredients. You don't have to go and find exotic stuff in order to be able to make these recipes. This is the stuff that you can find in your market, you know, or at your local farmer's market. It's not a book that was designed for you to have to be some gourmet chef in order to be able to make it. It was designed for real people that just want to make healthy foods that taste good.
Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds.
And we eliminate meat, fish, fowl, eggs, dairy products, oil, salt, and sugar.
Oh, yeah, those things. We don't need those things at all. I'm looking at...
It's important that when you talk about what you're excluding, you say it very quickly. We say meat, fish, fowl, eggs, dairy products, oil, salt, and sugar. The reason we say it so quickly is then it doesn't seem like you're giving up so much.
Well, you know, people don't realize it, but when they turn to a diet like this, their diet becomes so much more varied. As soon as they lift the veil and open the door, they're eating... A much more varied diet. So many more foods come into their life. It's a beautiful thing.
We've also done a very detailed nutritional breakdown, as you've seen,
mm-hmm.
along with the 2 weeks of integrated recipes, where we break down specifically how much sodium, potassium, calcium, carbohydrates, fat, protein. So you can really see and reassure yourself that you're getting all of the nutrients you need, despite the people trying to convince you that, you know, the diet that humans ate for thousands and thousands and thousands of years is somehow inadequate unless you include their specific, highly processed, highly expensive additives.
I'm looking at the tables, and the calories range from 1,800 to like 2,400, and I remember, or 2,700, there's a wide range here, and it's great because I don't think it really matters. There was a study recently that showed that eating the same amount of calories in plants versus animals results in different amounts of weight. So,
well, you know, it's like Dr. McDougall is fond of saying, you know, the fat you eat is the fat you wear.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of eating fat, we suggest people just rub it all over their belly and hips. And then when they're done, they can wash it off and not have to carry it around all week.
Right. Anyway, I'm looking at this beautiful picture of mango banana pie. It's so good. So run out and get your Bravo cookbook. It's really good. Thank you, Dr. Goldhammer, for joining me on It's All About Food, and keep doing the great work you're
doing. It's my pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. And if your readers do want to see the studies that we cited today, we have them freely available on our website at TrueNorthHealth.com.
TrueNorthHealth.com. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Go take a visit over at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. That's where I live. And send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And like us on Facebook at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. Rate us on iTunes. And have a delicious week.